وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. Going over just the more important points that we've covered so far, in very general. Islam took over the Arabian Peninsula and more. Islam had enemies that didn't want Islam to prosper. A point came where these enemies noticed that there is no turning back now. We have lost our power that we used to have before. We can't fight Islam anymore. Islam has become very strong. What do? We'll go into hiding. We'll dissimulate. We'll go into taqiyya, so to speak, in their version, of course. And that's where nifaq comes in. When you show one thing, but in your heart you have another. And we said that this, you could say, the highest level of nifaq could be found in the Bani Umayyah, because they were the ones who were the last enemies of Islam before the conquest of Mecca. Abu Sufyan leading the way, of course, of Bani Umayyah. He's the big shot of Bani Umayyah. He sees now he has lost all power. He has to go into hiding with his intentions. But sometimes he says certain things that have been recorded in history. But at the end of the day, he was a nobody. He couldn't do anything. He had grown old and weak, and he died eventually. But his son came after him. And that's where the problems of the Muslim Ummah started to grow more and more. This is where we got so far. So we're trying to figure out what went wrong that a people can do what they did. Before I go on, I have to thank the brothers and sisters for stepping up and reciting poetry, doing their version of Marsiya in the beginning of the Majlis, those who do Matam Noha at the end with their beautiful voices, with their beautiful poetry. I thank them. I kiss their hands and feet for this. I thank them so much. I don't know what else to do for them. All I can do is dua and pray for their tawfiq. And if they're doing this for themselves, because if we don't do it, others will fill in for us. We want to be smart. We want to take the opportunities when they're there, inshallah. These are blessings that if we don't do it, others will do it, and then we've lost, I missed out on it. I'm just letting us know, inshallah. I'm not good at these things, so all I can do is encourage others to do them, inshallah. Recite salawat for their tawfiq. So this animosity remains, and then a tree wants to be born, a tree wants to grow. That's what we compared it to, the tree of Bani Umayyah, that was destroyed by the Prophet, wants to regrow. A seed was planted in Saqifah, we said. It was all luck. Step number one, the seed. And I'm going to say list these so that those younger ones who take notes, it's easier for them to take notes. Step one was the seed, Saqifah. What happened in Saqifah? Step two is when you plant the seed, you have to take care of its environment. You have to get it ready so it can grow. Nothing bothers this little seed that's very weak before it grows into that strong and powerful tree. What was that? That was man'u tadwin al-hadith wa sunnat al-nabi. They didn't allow for almost 100 years for the sunnah of the Prophet, the sayings of the Prophet, the demeanor of the Prophet to be recorded, to be transmitted, to the extent that they didn't let the companions of the Prophet even go out of Medina during Umar's time. When you can't go out, people won't know. It's not like today where people can communicate easily. It's not like that. So this seed now that has been planted and it wants to grow, and if it depends on a few things for it to grow, the first thing being the environment of this seed, the environment is ready now. To the extent that after all these years, we say, of course, and many of the Ahlul Sunnah say, I've made this point over these nights. When you watch their ulama, some of them, they explain, yes, many hadith were fabricated during Muawiyah's time in favor of Uthman, in favor of Muawiyah, and against Imam Ali alayhi salam. It's very easy to do that. When you don't allow anyone to hear, then when there's one person who is a companion of the Prophet, he comes out all of a sudden and he starts relating hadith, people will take it, they'll be happy. These are hadiths, this is a companion of the Prophet. So if that companion isn't very pious and righteous, and maybe sometimes is influenced by material gains, then what are you going to do about it? This seed is ready to grow now, but do seeds grow without water? Step two was that environment, prohibition of hadith. Step three we reach. I want us to understand why in Ziyarat Ashura we keep sending la'an on Bani Umayyah. Goes back and forth. Allahumma al'an Ibn Ziyad, Allahumma al'an Bani Marwan, all of them. And this is Bani Umayyah Qatiba. You know what? Forget it. All of Bani Umayyah, may Allah curse them. Why? Why are we so hateful towards them? Why is the Shia school so hateful towards them? This is what these nights are for, so we understand why. Everything went wrong because of this family tree. Of course, I have to make a disclaimer here. And that is that, brothers and sisters, as I've said in previous nights too, maybe hinted at it. When you get academic, there are answers to what I'm saying right now. I'm giving us the Shia version according to our ulama and their analysis of the sources, history sources. What I'm saying now doesn't mean that they won't have answers, some of those who might differ with us. No, they'll have answers. And I'm trying to point to some of them over these nights, and I have. Of different things, in Saqifah, other places, what they have to say, some of them. What the normal, moderate ones have to say of our Sunni brothers. And then what those staunch, extreme Wahhabis have to say, that our ulama say that these Wahhabis, who are a minority. Now, when I say Wahhabi, of course, I mean the ones who know what they're doing. We have Wahhabis even that are naive people out there, and they just take what their shuyukh tell them. But our ulama say that these Wahhabis try to connect the ones that, you know, the ones that are problematic, try to assimilate and merge into the greater corpus of the Sunni school, so that they show the Shia to be the minority. And as a matter of fact, it's not the case. We are a minority, of course, but they are also a minority. They're not the majority, but they try to make it look like it's us versus everyone else. That's not the case. They'll tell you, why do you stand in the face of 1.5, I don't know, billion Muslims? Why do you want to break off and branch off? We say, we're not branching off like that, the way you are, the way you're showing it. No, no, you have your extremist ideology. Or else, as I said before, the second-hand sources that you believe in. And of course, not all of them are second-hand. Some of them might even be considered first-hand. They say a lot of the things we do, Musnad bin Hanbal. Why do you put it aside when it says something that you can't find in Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim? Like the story of Ghadir. Hakim al-Nisaburi. He has his famous book that he has. Why do you put him aside when all of a sudden he starts sounding like the Shia a little bit, although he's not Shia? Yes, this is what they're trying to do. So brothers and sisters, they might have answers to that. It's about now thinking a little bit. That's what it boils down to at the end of the day. Thinking a little bit. Or else history, there's going to be difference of opinion. Even with history of between us, the Shia. I might say something according to my research. Another alim might say something different because he's done his own research. It might be different regarding from the Prophet all the way down. I don't want to give too many examples. Just last night I got a question about an incident in history. Well, there's difference of opinion in this. And sometimes you're afraid to talk about these things, because the people, they haven't done research. And they'll think something is axiomatic, is obvious, is clear for sure. There's no doubt in it. And then when you say something a little bit different, they will attack you. And this is wrong. This is very wrong. It's unfortunate that we have these issues still within us sometimes. There's examples, many examples. I'm afraid to give them, to say any. That even amongst us, there will be difference of opinion among the ulama regarding incidents. For example, if I'll give you one example, of course, this is between us, the Shia. We believe in it. Okay, I'm not going to say the ones that the Shia might have a difference of opinion amongst themselves, but I'll give you an example of how they have answers for some of the things we say. For example, we of course believe in the fact that Imam Ali was born in the Kaaba. And if you think about it, that's enough for me to understand that there's something different about this man. So we start arguing in this fashion with this premise, but then all of a sudden you see people coming out and say, no, that wasn't the case of the Ahlul Sunnah, for example. So we have to be able to understand them and try to argue in a way that they'll understand. Same thing with the Shia amongst ourselves. I'm hearing things here and there. It makes me upset that we're not trusting our ulama. Why? Because he said something that I was raised believing something else. He said something against it. Well, is he pious? Yes. Has he spent half his life in the capital of Shia knowledge? Yes. Is he biased against Shia? No, he himself is a Shia alim. He's trying his best. Yes, I understand there are some who are illiterate out there. There are some who haven't studied that much out there. Today, unfortunately, this Amama is losing the meaning it had before. I have so much to say in this regard. I just want the brothers and sisters to know that we have to get to know our scholars a little better. That's all I'm going to say. Right? To understand. But once you understand that this person has really spent half his life there at least, and now he's saying something, the least is that you say, alright, maybe there is something out there. Maybe I was raised like this, yes, but maybe the books are a little bit different and we should give it some leeway that he has his own opinion, at least, inshallah. Recite salawat. And if you think about it, sometimes these differences are a blessing and a barakat and a means of growth of the ummah. Think about it, inshallah. Let it soak in our minds a little bit. Think about it. How can that be? Our ulama, our leaders today, they're saying that, look, when there's differences, this is a blessing. Work together and you'll grow. Inshallah, we heed to that. For example, some of the things I might say when I said a few days ago, Katibul Wahi for Muawiyah, that they say, and I started explaining how it doesn't matter if he was Katibul Wahi and so on, and I gave examples of why it doesn't matter. That's based on what they believe in. Some of our ulama might not even believe in the fact that Muawiyah was Katibul Wahi. That's just for argument's sake. That I might say, I'm not saying anyone told me this or anything, I'm just giving an example again. Sometimes it's just for argument's sake. Some people might hear, they say, oh, he believes in this now. No, inshallah, we have to be very precise. Alright, so this seed now that has been planted needs water to grow, right? Seeds don't grow without water. And that's one of the most important factors in the growth of a seed. So far, Bani Umayyah are getting very lucky. They're getting lucky. Saqifah was luck. Prohibition of hadith, luck. They couldn't do that. Our own people had to do that. Always the inside mistake, the inner mistakes. The weakness inside is what causes problems and lets the outer enemy come in. Alright, where is this water now? This water for this seed, for Bani Umayyah to actually reach power and gain strength, for this seed in the soil to sprout underground, of course, it hasn't come out yet, but underground to sprout, is something called the second saqifa, our ulama, some of them like to call it. How many of us have heard of that one? The second saqifa. I'm going to start before that, and then we'll make our way up to the second saqifa and what it's all about. Okay, and that's where the seed sprouts. Okay, so we want to pour water on this first. You want to pour water on a seed so it sprouts? What do? Abu Bakr, during his time, they wanted to expand the Muslim empire. So you have lots of battles going on around. He sends armies towards the Byzantine Empire. Among these armies, one of them is under the command of Yazid bin Abi Sufyan, the son of Abu Sufyan by the name of Yazid. And maybe Muawiyah named his son after his brother that he lost by the name of Yazid. They go and they conquer and Sham is under the command now of Yazid, and Abu Bakr appoints Yazid as the commander, as the governor and ruler of Sham. Damascus is under his rule now. This goes on, this is the 14th after Hijrah. 14 years after the Hijrah. How many years after the death of the Prophet? Around 4 years after the death of the Prophet. Yazid dies, Muawiyah is put in place of Yazid. This is where it starts. This is where it starts. I'm pretty sure, I haven't read this anywhere, I'm pretty sure that Ali ibn Abi Talib was telling the Khulafa, do not let this person take charge of Shamat. not only is Damascus now under the rule of Muawiyah, but the greater area of Sham is under his command. Lebanon, Palestine, maybe parts of Jordan and Syria, all under Muawiyah now. Now it's interesting, and here I have a question myself I haven't been able to solve yet. Inshallah, I'll reach a conclusion on this in the future. They say Umar ibn al-Khattab was very strict when it came to governors and those ruling different parts of the Muslim Ummah and empire. He would replace people left and right, and he like took everyone out apparently after Abu Bakr died. But there's one person who remained. One person who remained after Yazid died and Muawiyah came in his place. And who was that? Muawiyah bin Abi Sufyan. Now some might say here that there was a conspiracy. I haven't studied this part that much, so I'm just letting you know what happened. Umar keeps this one person and has changed apparently 99% of the other people that are out there. Why? This is a question to be out there, to keep in our minds, inshallah. To the extent that Muawiyah would use this later in his arguments, that I am the one who Umar ibn al-Khattab did not replace me with anyone else. And of course, Umar ibn al-Khattab has a very high status amongst the Muslimin. Plus, he's very strict. So when he keeps someone there, it shows that there's something significant about this person. Right? Uthman comes to power. Uthman says, how can I replace a person that Umar didn't replace? You see? What's going on? I don't know. Now with Uthman, it makes sense because they're cousins. Uthman is the cousin of Muawiyah. But why did Umar keep him when he replaced everyone else? This is something that we have to look into. Ali ibn Abi Talib, he's arguing now. He has to try to get Uthman to change Muawiyah. What does he say? He says to Uthman, listen, Muawiyah, I'm trying to show the malice of Muawiyah to this extent that Ali ibn Abi Talib, when he wants to complain to Uthman, he tells him Muawiyah used to listen to Umar, but he doesn't listen to you. He doesn't fear you. He used to fear Umar, but he doesn't fear you. That shows that Umar was high status of that time. You couldn't go against him, but now Umar has kept him. These are all little signs of what's going on here. You know, you have to put these pieces together, inshallah. Now it's interesting that Muawiyah, when he takes power, he tells his parents in different places, different occasions. He sees with his mother, he's with his mother once and with his father once. And to each of them, when he tells them, now history says this, he tells them that, Mom, Dad, I'm in power now. I've taken Sham for is mine. It's interesting that they both say the same thing. Now here, you can tell the look on their faces, first of all. They're just like, what? We were tulaqa. What happened? All right, my son, you know, now that you have it, listen, these people became Muslim before you. Now, both of them had told him on different occasions. It's interesting. That these people were all Muslim before you, so make sure you keep them happy. But man, stick to what you got. This is where the water is poured on this seed. You give it that little bit of power that is necessary for it to crack open that seed and sprout out. And it's starting to sprout this seed now. Let me tell you a little bit of how Muawiyah was and how this turn and change happens, where you have Ahlus Sunnah now also not liking Muawiyah that much. But I have a point to make in the end, and I'll come back to this point. The point is this though. They say that Umar, he went to visit Muawiyah once, because he would supervise and make sure he overlooks what's going on, the governors and all that. He made a trip, they say, once to Sham. Now how does he go? They say Umar would go on his camel, donkey, whatever it was, and with like a little servant with him, and not too much, you know, not an entourage or anything. He goes to meet Muawiyah. Muawiyah comes out to receive the Khalifa of the Muslimin. But how does he come out? Does he come out like that, humbly and stuff? No. He comes out with an entourage and escorted. And you would think that these are knights or something. Then this is like the Roman Empire or king or something like that that's coming out. First of all, you're not even a Khalifa. You're just a governor. Second of all, you're in the time of still close to the Prophet. The Prophet would ride his camel, his donkey, whatever. Umar is doing the same thing. What is this? Umar, they say he picked up some stones and like threw it at him. What are you doing? What's going on? You can sense it right here that there's a difference all of a sudden. When it comes to the Khilafah and the successorship of the Prophet, there's a difference. He's making a monarchy here. What's going on? It looks like a king. Even Umar was upset. But once again, you ask yourself, okay, aren't these signs that Muawiyah has to be taken away and replaced? But what does Muawiyah say in justification of this? He says, we are close to the Byzantines, to the Roman Empire, Eastern Rome. We have to show them our strength. We have to be intimidating. And apparently this passes as convincing for the Khalifa, and he stays there. But this is, you see how Muawiyah is changing the way things are done. This seed is sprouting now. There's a lot that happens in the time of these Shaykhain, of Umar and Abu Bakr. But as I said, we're not looking at it from the perspective of the Shia school and how Ali had to be there and all of that. We're looking at it from Bani Umayyah and how Bani Umayyah took advantage of this. Alright, so we poured water on our seed now. This seed is now sprouting. It wants to come out. How does it come out? How does it sprout? It's still underground though. Step 3. What do we have so far? Step 1, the seed is planted. Step 2, environment. Step 3, we water it. Excuse me, step 4 now, the seed wants to come out and grow so that it can come out of the ground now. It's still underground though, remember this. It wants to come out. When it comes out, that means that Khilafah has become Bani Umayyah's. Umar is on his deathbed. So we're flash forwarding. Umar is on his deathbed. And this is where Saqifa Athaniya takes place. The second Saqifa. That's going to help this seed grow. The water was there. The sunshine and the environment, everything's ready. It wants to grow. This little bit of power that the seed had wants to grow. Muawiyah is sitting in Sham, he has some power. He wants to grow in his power. Umar is dying, Aisha sends for him or goes to him herself. Please don't leave this ummah without a shepherd. Abdullah bin Umar, the son of Umar, goes to his father. Oh father, please appoint someone after yourself as a shepherd for this ummah. Does that ring a bell, brothers and sisters? Recite Salawat. Does it or not? Once again, this is the part where I say we have to be using our minds a little bit. Oh, Khalifa of Rasulullah. The one who takes the place of someone is usually lower than the one that you're taking the place of. When a king leaves and puts someone in his place, that person, is he as high as the king? No. But he has the authority of the king, right? That's what a Khalifa is, kind of. Well, of course, in the Islam, of course it is. The Prophet is the highest of all people. If the second Khalifa understands, and those around him understand, that someone has to be appointed. We're not even looking at hadiths here. Who cares about Ghadir for now? Let's put that to the side. Let's use our common sense. They're understanding that a shepherd is needed after the Khalifa, or else problems will happen. Fitna will rise after the Khalifa. Yani the Prophet didn't understand this? These are the questions. The Prophet, who is of course higher than all of the Khulafa put together. وَمَا يَنْطِقُ عَنِ الْهَوَىٰ إِنْ هُوَ وَحْيٌ إِلَّا وَحْيٌ يُوحَىٰ. He only speaks because of revelation. Only truth comes out of his mouth. He doesn't understand. He's not connected to Allah enough to understand that if he leaves this ummah to the people, problems will rise. He doesn't understand this. But everyone else understands this. Abu Bakr understands that he has to appoint Umar directly after him. Umar understands that someone has to be appointed after him. Muawiyah understands that he has to appoint his son after him. But the Prophet doesn't understand. These are the questions that we have. This is what I mean when I say the Shia is known for trying to think a little bit more about these questions. It doesn't make sense. Till today, all of this bloodshed, you can't hide it. It's the truth. You can't hide the fact that lots of bloodshed is because just of this divide, this sectarianism and all that. Within the Sunni school, within the Shia school, there has been problems throughout history. The Prophet doesn't understand that all of this is going to happen. Till today, the problems we have is because the Prophet didn't understand that he has to appoint someone after him. These are our questions. Anyway, so they tell Umar this, and of course Umar, even if they hadn't told him, he would have understood this. So what does he do? He puts together a 6-person council. Now, the Shia youth, I want you to pay attention, because these parts of history we usually don't know. We know about the Battle of Khaybar and Imam Ali, and we're proud about that. We know about Ghadir al-Khum to an extent, but then as we move on to after the Prophet, we kind of neglect some of the history. Why? Because the history before the Prophet passed away is important, because it's in there that the Prophet we know appointed Imam Ali, and we tell our youth that so they know these things. But there are some things that happened after the Prophet's demise during Imam Ali's time that we usually sometimes neglect, and we have to understand. A 6-person council is appointed. 6 of the greatest Sahaba, 6 of the greatest companions of Rasulullah, Umar ibn al-Khattab calls them and summons them to come to him. He's on his deathbed, or it's close to his death. When they come in, the reports say that he is frowning and looking at them angrily. He's saying, I know that all of you would like to be the rulers after me. Each and every one of you. You would like to be the Khalifa after me. Imam Ali being one of them. These are big Sahaba, Talha, Zubair, Sa'd bin Abi Waqqas, Abdul Rahman bin Auf. These are huge Sahaba. These are all, I think, yes, these are all part of those 10 Sahaba that are the Al-Ashara Al-Mubashara. Al-Mubashareen Bil-Jannah. There's a hadith, parentheses, brothers and sisters, there's a hadith that is called the hadith of the 10 granted paradise. Remember this. We don't believe in this hadith for sure, because it's a hadith that, first of all, it's not in our sources, that says 10 of the companions of Rasulullah are going to go to heaven no matter what. One of them is Abdul Rahman bin Auf, and if I remember correctly, he's the same one who narrates this hadith. And in the ilm and science of hadith, if a hadith is praising someone, one of the reasons not to really believe it, unless there's other evidence that proves its authenticity, one of the reasons for this is if in the chain of narrators, one of those people or that person who is praised in the hadith is in that chain of narrators. Okay? But of course, as you remember, and as we discussed before, our Sunni brothers and sisters, they believe in adalat al-sahaba, the righteousness of the sahaba. Even if a Sahabi relates a hadith regarding himself from the Prophet, it is accepted. So in this hadith, you have Abu Bakr, you have Umar, you have Uthman, you have Ali, and you have Sa'd bin Abi Waqqas, the one who never gave bay'at Ali. You have Abdul Rahman bin Auf and Talha, Zubair. These are all huge Sahaba. So 6 of them now are in this 6-person shura, 6-person council. Umar says, I put you together, you have to agree on someone after me in this 6-person council. Tomorrow night I'll talk about this council a little bit more. It's important how it was designed, because this has everything to do with Bani Umayyah growing. Alright, these 6, Umar tells each of them, this is the problem with you, this is the problem with you. He finds the faults of each and every one of them. Here he says something interesting. He says, Ali, your problem and ishkal and fault is that you have a sense of humor. Yani the only problem with Ali is that he brings smiles to people's faces. This is the problem with Ali. But at the same time, and I've seen this in the books, that he says, if you become Khalifa though, you will guide the people to the straight path. SubhanAllah. Shouldn't this be enough? That the second Khalifa said that. Then he looks at Uthman. Now this I haven't read myself, I haven't done, I haven't looked into it, but Ayatollah Subhani, Sheikh Ja'far al-Subhani, which is one of our greatest maraji' right now in Qom, he says this in his book. I'll just read off of that. He says, Uthman, he looked at Uthman and he told Uthman, I can see it's as if you're going to become Khalifa. And you are going to spread out and distribute the Baytul Mal and treasury between your own tribe. He says this to Uthman. And then he goes on to say to the six-person shura and council, he says to them, help each other. If you help each other, you and your children will benefit from the fruits of Khilafah. Okay, wait a second. What do you mean benefit from the fruits of Khilafah? What does that mean? Question mark. The Ummah will benefit? I understand. But you and your children will benefit? I don't understand. Now, if this report is accurate, as I said, Ayatollah Ja'far Subhani narrates this in his book. But if you envy each other and are angry with each other, you fight each other and all of that, this is interesting. Muawiyah will hijack the Khilafah. This just brings goosebumps to you. That what's going on? Is Muawiyah that powerful already? Does he know what he's doing already? Does Umar know what he's doing? If he does know what he's doing, then why does he say anything about it? Take him away. Do something about it. But nothing. Nothing. This is where we have questions, brothers and sisters. Those of Ahlus Sunnah, our brothers and sisters of Ahlus Sunnah, who believe in Muawiyah. And they say, yes, the problem was that Muawiyah gave the Khilafah to his son as a monarchy. That was a problem because it was unprecedented. There was no such a thing in the Ummah. The question is this, why do you say that? If the first Khalif and he can appoint one person and give it to him after himself, if the second Khalifa can put together a council like this and they choose someone from amongst them, which we'll talk about more tomorrow night, it's an important incident in the history of Imam Ali alayhi salam. If they can do that and the people can have a consensus on someone and choose Ali ibn Abi Talib, then why not? Why can't Muawiyah appoint his son as Khalifa? This is a question too. You see how, if you remember, those of you who are here from night one, how we're going to take this history and we're going to take it all the way back to Saqifah. It's these questions. Why? Who says? Who says it's wrong if Muawiyah is a rightly chosen Khalifa? And you say that he had no bad intentions and he was chosen in any way and now the people have to listen to him. Then why is it that you find fault in him giving the Khilafah to his son? There's nothing wrong with that. Because the Prophet didn't say, this is how you give Khilafah, that's how you give Khilafah. He left it to us, right? So don't find fault in Muawiyah. Either don't find fault in Muawiyah giving Khilafah to his son, or find fault from the first and the second and the third Khalifas, the fourth, all the way to Muawiyah. You see how these are all attached? And then Ashura makes sure that this string of the beads of your tasbih goes through all the beads. These beads are connected through the string of Ashura. Either the string is there and all the beads are there, or you pull the string out, all the beads are scattered. These questions. And that's why, recite Salawat. And that is why, if you want to summarize the Shia approach to Khilafah and Imamah versus the Sunni approach to Khilafah and Imamah, it goes back to one thing, and I'll explain that, and then I'll end. If you ask the Shia, how is Khilafah with them? How is Imamah with them? They will tell you, we have no idea where Imamah lies, the same way we have no idea where Nubuwwah and Prophethood lies. Allahu a'lamu haythu yaj'alu risalata. Allah knows best where to put His prophethood, to whom to give it to. Okay. So what do we do? someone is already chosen. There is an objective reality. We try to discover that. How do you discover that? What tool are you going to use? We have no tools for it. The only tool we have is wahi. Well, who receives wahi? The Prophet. Or a ma'asum? The Prophet receives wahi. So he lets us know. He lets us know who this objective reality lies in. Whether we are here or not here. That's an objective reality. It's there. The Prophet only discloses it for us. That's the Shia school. What about the Sunni school of thought? The Sunni school of thought says that there is no objective reality. How do you choose an imam then? Well, however he's chosen. Can we choose him through one person appointing another? They say, yes, you can. We say, really, did the Prophet say that? Did the Prophet say that? They say, no. Then we say, where do you get that from? They say, what happened in Saqifa? What happened in Saqifa shows that, yeah, someone can be chosen. Excuse me. What happened after Abu Bakr? A person can be chosen through the appointance or appointment of one person. Can someone become Khalifa and Imam through a few people getting together of the elites and, you know, having a consensus on someone? Yes, they can. Oh, really? Did the Prophet say that? No. The Prophet didn't say that. But what happened in Saqifa shows that it can happen, right? The Prophet didn't say it. That's interesting how. Let me open another parenthesis here. The Wahhabis. You step in a place that the Prophet hasn't stepped, they'll tell you it's bid'ah. But when it comes to the Khilafah, they won't say, oh, the Prophet didn't determine this method, so he left it to us. Right? These are all questions. If that's bid'ah, because the Prophet didn't determine it, didn't show it to us, well, the Prophet didn't show us this way either, but it's not. Parenthesis closed. Back to the examples I was giving. Can a Khalifa be chosen by a 6-person council that is appointed by the previous Khalifa? Yes, it can. Really? Which hadith? Which incident the Prophet mentioned this? No, the Prophet doesn't have to mention it. Well then what? Where do you get it from? What happened after Umar? So each of these things shows that this is a way to appoint a Imam, a Khalifa after. You see, here it becomes it's not something objective. It is something subjective. That's why we say, okay then, if it can be, it can happen like this, then it can also happen through Muawiyah appointing his son. Those of you who say Yazid had problems but Muawiyah didn't, our question is this. Why? Because he started a monarchy. Well, I will say the same thing to you. A Khalifa can be chosen like that. Really? The Prophet didn't say that? Who cares? Muawiyah did it. And since it happened, it shows that it can happen like that. You get it? This is all of Khilafah and Imamah in a nutshell. The main difference between us and, of course, our brothers in the Sunni school. Inshallah, we reflect on these questions that we have and the Shia school has. Assalamu alaikum, ya Aba Abdullah. We want to learn a lesson today. A lesson that we can resonates with us. Because who are we kidding? We have wronged ourselves a lot throughout our lives. We all know it. All of us. Me more than others. And when you look at Ashura and you get upset about Ashura, you think about what happened. You're like, man, I wish it wouldn't have happened. What led to all of that? Well, everything went wrong, yes. But what makes it worse is if you are a person who you were the last block, the last building block, inshallah, Rabbizan Mizanat. This last building block that puts together all of the puzzle of Ashura. Hur bin Yazid al-Riyahi was that last piece. Imam Hussein has traveled all the way from Medina to here, all the way from Medina to here, and he's this close to Kufa, and then Hur arrives. and he cuts off the imam. If he hadn't done that, then we wouldn't be here today maybe. Why? Maybe Hussein would have made it to Kufa. Maybe none of that would have happened. All those tragedies. Hur, in a way, is the cause of all of these tragedies. Of course, he didn't know it's going to happen like this, and that's very important. But at the end of the day, you're going to cut off the son of the daughter of the Prophet, and you're going to cause all of Ashura to happen? This is Hur. Hur cuts him off, the Imam, and tells him, the Khalifa says that you're not allowed to go. Ibn Ziyad says you're not allowed to come to Kufa. Well, then let me go other places. You're not allowed to go there. Every option on the table? No, you cannot. The only thing we can do is if I take you and escort you into Kufa. That's all. And here the Imam, he knows what's going on. He gets upset. And he tells Hur, Hur, thakalatka ummuk. May your mother weep for you. Hur here has a huge test in front of him. Hur is a warrior. And he says to Imam Hussein, Ya Hussein, if anyone else had made mention of my mother in front of me, I would have dealt with him differently. But what can I do that you are the son of Fatima, you are Hussein? Hur is teaching history how to treat those who have to be treated well. Hur is teaching history how you treat the daughter of the Prophet. We'll get back to that. He passes this test. Alhamdulillah. Good for you. Good for you, Hur. Let's fast forward to Ashura. Thousands are coming into Karbala. Everyone wants a piece of Hussein. Their dunya equals Hussein. We have to get rid of Hussein. I want his blood. But there's one person here that is watching what is happening, and Ashura, it's going to happen for real. Imam Hussein is not allowed to leave anymore. And Umar ibn Sa'd is there now. Shimr is there. And there's no way out. He says, are you really going to do this? To Umar ibn Sa'd, yes, we're going to do this. Hur says, I see myself between Jannah and Nar. Brothers and sisters, inshallah, when the time comes for us to make the right decisions in life, we make these decisions. Hur sees himself between Jannah and Nar. And that's where he leaves the camp of Yazid towards the camp of Aba Abdullah. Good for you, Hur. Good for you. Brothers and sisters, whenever a haram comes up for us, know that the camp of Hussein is on the other side waiting for you to go towards him. Don't say to yourself that, oh, if it was Hussein, I would go. No, no, no. Every time we listen to our Ahlul Bayt, because they say, stay away from such a thing and such a thing, we are moving towards the camp of Hussein, inshallah. Hur goes to the camp of Hussein, but in what state? They say he is coming. Some say his shoes around his neck, walking humbly, his head down. What's wrong? He's saying dhikr. He's saying, oh Allah, forgive me, for I repent to you. What's wrong, Hur? What have you done wrong? I put fear into the hearts of your chosen ones. I put fear in the heart of the children of the daughter, of the son of the daughter of your Prophet. I caused all of this. I should have let go. What a great sin. What a grave sin. He comes to Hussein. Is Hussein going to forgive me? Is he not going to forgive me? Hussein sees him. What's wrong? Please, halli min tawbah, can I come to you? Hussein says, yes. Don't you know us, Ahlul Bayt? That's what we are all about. I was waiting for a piece of gold to come. I want to gather as much gold as I can and send it to Allah. Welcome. Welcome. Hur fights. One of the first, or if not the first, to fight. And he fights valiantly until he falls to the ground. Instead of him making the wrong decision and falling to the ground and having his companions on Umar ibn Sa'd's side come, Hussein comes to his side. Ya Hur, anta hurrun kama sammatka ummuk. Your mother called you Hur, I'm going to say you are Hur. Your mom gave you the right name. You are free in this life and the next. Go to Allah. Go to the Prophet. Go to the Prophet proudly. Good for you, Hur. You made the right decision. Why? Maybe it's because you respected my mother, Fatima. But let's go to Medina, oh Hur. Maybe you had heard the oppression that happened to our mother Fatima. Brothers and sisters, Ya Sahib al-Zaman, forgive me for this saying this. I have read this. That a time came when Ali ibn Abi Talib had buried Fatima overnight. The next day there were some who came and said, Ali, how dare you bury Fatima without telling us? We will take the body of Fatima out and pray over her. أول مظلوم السلام عليك يا أمير المؤمنين. If Hur was upset that he had put fear into the hearts of the children of Fatima, there were some who attacked the home of Fatima. The children of Fatima have to watch their mother on the ground of Medina. ألا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. نسألك اللهم وندعوك باسمك العظيم العظام العز الأجل الأكرم يا الله 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 يا رحمن يا رحيم يا مقلب القلوب ثبت قلوبنا على دينك. ما تسمع الحسين.
يا حسين يا حسين
يا حسين يا حسين.